From WJCT Studios in Jacksonville, Florida, I'm Ray Hollister.
I'm Tom Braun.
I'm Aaron Edelson.
And this is Deemable Tech, the show that brings you the latest news in tech, computers, gadgets, the internet, and social networking, and then we answer your tech questions. If you need help with your desktop, laptop, tablet, or mobile phone, we're here to help. If you have a question that you want to ask Deemable Tech, give us a call at 904-372-DEEM. That's 904-372-3336. Or you can send us an email at questions@deemable.com. Post a message on our Facebook wall at facebook.com/deemable. Or send us a tweet at deemable. And actually, this week, we have got so many questions that we are just going to spend all day talking about questions.
That's
well, not
right.
All day, maybe just all this hour. So, and let's start with this question that we got emailed in by Alexi. Now, she, I think, wins the award for having the shortest question ever.
I think Alexi might be a he.
Oh, that
Russian,
could be too.
Possibly.
But regardless, it is a simple question, but it is a good one. And her question, or his question, sorry, we didn't find out, is what is the cloud?
Okay,
Tom?
Well, that's actually a really great question because people use the cloud as a buzzword so much, but they don't know what it means. But in fact, you know, Aaron, you were mentioning earlier, people have really been using the cloud for years, right?
Well, absolutely. It seems that people sometimes have trouble getting over this new concept of a cloud, but email actually has been stored on servers for years, going back to AOL and CompuServe and some of these other...
You don't have it on your computer. It's on
exactly.
Hotmail.
Exactly. You would log into a website. You would look up your email and see what you got new. It wasn't stored locally on your machine. So, I mean, the idea of storing things up in the cloud really isn't anything new, but the new terminology kind of has some people scared, I believe.
Yeah, it's kind of the latest buzzword.
Exactly.
For marketing people to use.
Both positive and negatively, too.
Yeah, true.
Mm-hmm. Well, Alexi, let me start you off with an actual technical definition of a cloud that's a little more complicated than just email, and I'll try and keep it short and understandable. So basically, the problem with storing documents or media or files on any single computer is that computers, no matter how powerful they are, they break.
Right.
A better idea would be to store your document on, let's say, three different computers. Then if one or two or even both of them break, the third one's still there and you've still got your document. But that's a pain because then every time you update that document, you would have to update all three computers.
Yeah, I've tried that. That's not fun.
Yeah. So a better idea that people have come up with is to treat three computers as one virtual computer. And the individual physical computers become essentially invisible. They also back each other up. So if one goes down, the others can recover the data. And then you can even swap one of the physical computers out for a newer one without affecting the virtual computer where your document is stored. So now let's take this setup and multiply it by hundreds or even thousands of computers. That's basically what a cloud is. You may not realize this, but Amazon.com doesn't just make their money selling Twilight sequels. Yeah, Amazon actually runs one of the largest and most successful cloud services in the world, and they call it EC2 for some reason. And they make truckloads of money that way. And a ton of popular websites and apps that most people are probably familiar with, Reddit, just off the top of my head, are actually hosted on Amazon's EC2 cloud.
Yeah, Netflix, actually. That's right. Most of their stuff comes from. Also, Pinterest.
Yes, yes.
Tons of. Basically, every new app that you can think of probably runs on Amazon's cloud network. But, okay, that's cool. But how does the cloud affect Alexi? Like, what does it impact her?
Okay. Well, for normal users, cloud services are really a great way to back up your documents, your pictures, your music, whatever you have to the internet. Once it's out on the internet, you can access it from other computers or devices that you own. For instance, personally, I love music. I have an extensive MP3 collection, literally tens of thousands of MP3s. So I'm using Google Music now, and I just download this very small program from Google, and it automatically, over a period of actually weeks, started uploading every single song I had into the Google Music cloud.
Right.
And it syncs with iTunes, so when I add a new song or playlist in iTunes, it will actually upload that into the cloud as well.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. Huh. And once it's there, though, I have it from any computer. You know, I don't have to carry my music over to my office. I just log into Google Music, plug in my headphones, and I have all the same songs, even if I just, you know, bought them yesterday.
And you don't have to deal with the whole synchronizing things. It just is synchronized because you get everything from the cloud, which we'll talk about more of the terminology about that later.
Yeah.
And for mobile users, using this on maybe like a laptop, for instance, it's kind of nice that they've made it where it'll detect when you're online and resume uploading at those points. So if you get interrupted, you're
right.
at a coffee shop or something and you have to go to work, it'll start uploading again when you're back home and in your own Wi-Fi or something like
yeah.
that.
Yeah. So that's just one personal instance of the cloud that I take advantage of. Another one, Alexi, how about this? Have you ever thought about ditching Microsoft Word entirely?
Why right. would I want to do that?
Exactly. Good question. For most people, this is a total possibility at this point. Because what's the big complaint, especially if you're a student working on a paper with Microsoft Word? And we're going to actually address this question later on in the program. Somebody lost their document. Well, Google Docs offers a nice word processor that is just simply through your browser. It does 75% of the stuff that Microsoft Word does. And for most people, it's going to be completely adequate. But it's online. It's in the cloud.
Right.
And any change you make in a document in Google Docs is automatically saved. And it's not saved on your computer. It's saved in the cloud. So, you know, it can't be lost.
And the nice part about Google Docs is that you can share it with your friends, or you can share yeah. it with your coworkers. So if you're working on a document together, like we do here at Deemable Tech,
yep.
when we prepare our show notes and we prepare what we're going to talk about during the week, we get on our Google Docs account and share the document together, and we can actually see what the other person is doing. Mm-hmm. Like, we can be at our homes, we can chat back and forth on the side next to the document.
Well, yeah. From a mobile perspective, it really adds a new element for users. Instead of just sitting in front of your desk now,
right.
you may be working on a document and leave it at home, and you yeah. need it for a meeting or for school or something
or,
like that.
Or like before we sat down to record the episode, we were in another studio working on the notes.
Mm-hmm.
All we had to do is get up and walk in here.
Right.
It was fantastic.
Open up our computers again or open up your phone, and the documents are right there. If you have a smartphone, you can download the Google Drive app and access all of those documents on the fly.
And if you have Android, you can actually edit it. If you have iPhone,
and
unfortunately.
Upload documents, too.
And upload it, too. Yeah.
Oh, that's so beautiful.
It's not as Google Docs isn't as friendly with iPhone. I've
yeah,
complained about that many times.
They're not playing nice right now.
Yeah.
But for Apple users, Apple does have its own cloud, the iCloud.
Yeah, absolutely. With iCloud, it's a little bit more behind the scenes. You don't see it as much. There's the photo stream, which automatically uploads your pictures from your phone or your iPad to your laptop or
right.
Your Mac. There's also, they've added the, just slipped my mind, your documents get stored on iCloud.com.
Nice.
So it's kind of like Google Docs. Mm-hmm. It's not as sophisticated as Google Docs is yet. But it is really nice.
It's more of a file synchronization than
yeah.
a true cloud storage environment.
Right. Right now you can't edit it on the web, but you can pull up those documents and make changes to them and upload and download. So I'd love to see it get more to the point where Google Docs is, where you can edit it on the fly and maybe share it with other people who don't have iOS devices.
Right. So. Before we move on from Google Docs, I should mention this to avoid confusion. If listeners out there are interested in trying out Google Docs is starting to rebrand itself as Google Drive.
True.
It's
yeah.
really the same thing. Google Drive, Google Docs, same thing.
Yeah, I think they were just changing that because they expanded Google Docs to where you could put anything in there.
Right.
Before, you could only put a Word document, a spreadsheet, or a presentation.
Right.
Correct. Before, it was just a document replication service. So instead right. of using Microsoft Word, you would be using Google Docs word processor. But now it's more of a cloud
yeah.
storage with Google Docs built into it. So
exactly.
Google Docs is now a part of Google Drive.
Yeah. And that was a smart move for them. It was kind of confusing when they changed over and started calling it Google Drive. But
mm-hmm.
it's still, I think it was a smart move to keep everyone in that silo, so to speak.
Yeah.
Or just to compete with Microsoft SkyDrive.
Oh, sure. Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. There's a few other cloud solutions that I'd like to mention. I also use Dropbox. Dropbox allows me
yeah.
to pick a folder on my computer, and anything I put in that folder is automatically, it's uploaded to the Dropbox cloud. And if I install Dropbox on another computer, that folder will appear on that computer or that device, that mobile phone, and it will be mirrored. It will have any updates to the files I do will be mirrored on that device. There's a number of other excellent cloud services that work similarly. I'll just mention them by name: Evernote, SpringPad, SugarShare. I'm sure Aaron and Ray can think of others.
Right now, I'm actually drawing a blank. But yeah, you've mentioned a lot of the good ones. Oh, Dropbox. You did mention that one. Box also is another good one. Gives you 50 gigs.
Box tends to be a little bit more towards commercial users.
True. With their, that's very true. And Microsoft has their SkyDrive, like you were just talking about.
Mm-hmm. But in a nutshell, why should you care about the cloud, Alexi? Because the cloud allows robust backup of any data that's important to you, and it makes it accessible not just on one computer, but on any computer or any device that you authorize. You know, pretty much just like email.
Yeah, exactly.
Absolutely. For documents and pictures and things that are of a personal nature and not so having to be locked down, cloud is a good way to back up those things so you don't lose them in case of a catastrophic.
And that way you always know where they are.
Absolutely.
So. Mm-hmm. The irony is it really shouldn't be called the cloud. Because mm-hmm. there is no one cloud that everything goes into.
The universal
it's really
cloud.
A bunch of different cloud networks, different cloud servers. So maybe it should be like the sky.
Yeah.
And there's all these clouds in it mm-hmm. would be a better analogy. Because, I mean, there's iCloud, there's Dropbox, there's Evernote, and SpringPad, and Google Drive, and Google Play, and SugarSync, and there's iTunes Match, another one that Apple puts out.
Oh, okay,
If you called it the sky, though, the Skynet conspiracy theorists would have a heyday with that.
That's true. Yeah.
But they're definitely not like, it's not a unified thing. But people, it's just a buzzword. People hear it, they're like, I don't know what this means. It's almost like if you call it space, they'd be like, whoa, that sounds awesome. I have no idea what that means.
Yeah, that's true.
It's fairly simple.
It's a way to sell people the services they've had for years.
Yeah.
And it's something that, you know, the services started, it was like web-based. People were calling it web-based, and then it was web 2.0.
Mm-hmm.
And so the cloud was kind of something that you can visually see, oh, it's kind of up there.
Yeah, it's a metaphor.
Right.
I guess.
So it works. I mean, it does the job that marketing people need.
Right.
It's just funny. We were watching some commercials earlier with the cloud, and none of them really explain what it means. It's just this vague concept. But we have to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll answer more of your questions.
Yeah.
This is Deemable Tech. If you missed an episode of Deemable Tech, or you just want to hear the show again, you can catch our podcast on our website at deemable.com/podcast. That's deemable.com. Also, be sure to follow us on Facebook at facebook.com/deemable, or on Twitter at deemable. You can also find us on Google+. Just search for Deemable Tech. Up next, we'll be taking your calls, reading your emails, and answering your questions. If you have a tech question for Deemable Tech, give us a call at 904-372-DEEM. That's 904-372-3336. Or send us an email to questions@deemable.com. Welcome back to Deemable Tech. Let's take some more questions. We got a voicemail from Ryan in Atlanta.
Hey, this is Ryan from Atlanta. My mother-in-law had an old account with AOL, and she's been getting billed on a monthly basis from anywhere from $30 to $60 a month.
Oh, man.
And she has no idea why. She hasn't had an account in probably 5, 6, 7 years, who knows. So originally it was set up in her husband's name. Who has since passed away, and she's just trying to figure out how to get it to stop. Also, is there a way she can actually get her money back? So any help you could provide, it'd be awesome.
Well, thanks for the voicemail, Ryan. I guess this one is for me. A long, long time ago.
In a galaxy far, far away.
Well, no, it was actually on the north side of Jacksonville.
Oh, okay.
A galaxy far, far away.
For some of our listeners, possibly. I worked for AOL. I was one of the poor souls that worked for America Online in the saves department many years ago. And my job was to convince people not to cancel their AOL account. It was a soul-crushing, depressing job. I don't recall how much they paid me for each account that I saved, but I do remember very distinctly walking out on a $7,000 check.
Whoa.
Because my soul hurt. Now, don't get me wrong. Not then or even now was AOL not a great service. It really mm-hmm. was. But no matter how great the service is, trying to sell someone something that they've already decided they no longer want yeah. is just incredibly tiring.
I can't imagine.
I mean, and I worked second shift. It was horrible. Anyway, so
we know Ray's soul is worth at least $7,000.
Yeah, it's at least worth $7,000. Now, Ryan, if your mom-in-law happens to know the password for the account, you didn't mention that in the voicemail, so I wasn't sure. It is actually really easy to cancel your AOL account nowadays. It used to be that you had to search forever to find information about how to cancel it, and then you went through several web pages, and then they finally gave you the phone number. Then you had to wait on hold for an hour or two, and then you had to deal with some jerk like me who would arm wrestle you until you finally let them give you an additional month for free, and then you tried it again next month. But nowadays, it's really easy to cancel your account. All you have to do is sign into your AOL account using the master account at myaccount.aol.com and then go to manage my subscriptions under service options, then click cancel my billing. From there, you'll get a couple of options to choose lower price plans if you want to hang on to your paid account because of all the great features that AOL account gives you, like premium McAfee security, backup dial-up access, up to $10,000 identity theft insurance coverage, and up to $1,000 hardware.
Ray.
I just slipped into sales mode. I'm sorry, guys.
Yeah, dude, you're zoning out on us, man.
I just kicked in right there with my programming. But if you do want to reduce your plan, you get that option too. Otherwise, hit cancel my billing and you're done. Well, actually, you're not done. It just cancels your billing. It converts you to a free account. If you really want to cancel the AOL account, you have to go back in after you cancel the billing, go back to manage my subscriptions, and then click cancel under your AOL plan header, and finally click cancel AOL. And we'll include the links to that in our show notes.
Now, just really quickly, Ray, you mentioned that canceling their billing doesn't cancel the account. So for our listeners that have AOL and are maybe using it over a broadband connection like Comcast or UVerse,
and they want to keep their AOL email address.
And they like their email, that's completely possible now,
absolutely.
Correct?
Absolutely, yeah. And you can use it for AIM, you can use it for AOL email, continue using
totally.
It. So it's not a bad idea. Now, assuming that she doesn't know what the password is, then you'll have to call AOL to cancel the account.
Dun, dun, dun.
Yeah, have her call the number on her bank statement or the credit card statement. They'll have to verify the account, which usually they'll use the name on the account, which in this case would be her husband's name, and the payment method, so the credit card number. They also might need to know the phone number that was associated with the account. If she can verify all that, then they should be able to cancel the account. If she tries all that and she can't get the account canceled, then have her call the bank and put a stop on the payment. I've seen that happen where people just weren't able to verify their identity with AOL and they just had to stop the payment because mm-hmm. there's no other way to stop it. Now, that is kind of the nuclear option. So try to work things out with AOL as much as you can first. But if it comes down to it and you have to do it and stop the charges. What'll happen is, ironically, AOL will cancel the account after two payments have been missed. So it'll work.
There you go.
Now, the bad news is, as far as getting a refund, back when I was at AOL, I actually spoke to a guy who had an AOL account since it was first released on DOS.
Wow.
Back in 1991. I was shocked when I saw his account pop up in front of me. But he had actually sold the computer that he had AOL on back in 1992. And he thought his account was canceled. And he was calling because he had just noticed that he had been charged every single month since then.
Oh, my gosh.
It was 2001 when he called. So for 9 years, he had been being charged for AOL service, and he never used it.
And that's how they make their money.
Yeah, and you know, as much as I wanted to, I couldn't give him more than 2 months back. Mm-hmm. There was nothing I could do for it. And I could see that he didn't have any activity on it, but their policy is their policy. So unfortunately, she's probably out of luck. If she calls customer service, they might be willing to give her back a month or maybe two. I don't know what their policies are now, but they may be able to. But I highly doubt that they'll give her any more than that. And actually, I kind of highly doubt that they'll even give her that, but it's worth trying. Now, in AOL's defense, you know, think of it this way. If you unplugged your television set and didn't contact your cable company, is the cable bills going to stop coming?
No, they're not.
Yeah. The only difference here is that most people don't have their cable bill on auto draft.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, if you did, Comcast or Roadrunner would keep on charging you. So, and if you didn't pay attention to it, so as, I mean, obviously in your mom-in-law's situation, Ryan, there's extenuating circumstances. And unfortunately, that does happen sometimes when you lose a spouse. You know, some bills get caught up in the mix, but, you know, I kind of understand where AOL is coming from, too. Maybe that's just my programming coming back. So we got another email. Let's see. This was from Michelle. It says, my kid stepped on my Kindle. Ooh, ouch. And now half of the screen is completely destroyed. Will Amazon replace it for me? And have I lost all the books I purchased? I'm really concerned that, oh my goodness, that I've lost 50 Shades of Grey.
Oh, man. Yeah. Well, thanks for admitting that, Michelle. that really sucks about your Kindle. I highly recommend investing in one of those protective cases.
Yeah.
I know you got a $99 Kindle. You don't want to spend another $40 or $50 on a case. But, you know, replacing your Kindle all the time will cost you more money in the long run. And besides, they have all these cool covers that make your Kindle look like an actual book or whatever.
That's true. And, if your kid has a habit of stepping on your stuff, though, you might want to make sure you get a hard one.
Yeah.
One of the softer ones.
But I can tell you, even from personal experience, just having even a basic case will greatly improve the longevity of your Kindle. Okay, but on to the good news, bad news. Let's start with the bad news. If you or your kid broke your Kindle by accident, you are outside of the one-year warranty. Amazon is not going to replace it for free unless you bought one of their extended warranties. So the chances are that you are going to have to spring for a new Kindle.
Yeah, if you're within the 1 year, it's kind of at their discretion.
Yeah.
They don't have to replace it if you broke it, but they might. And actually, they have a really great customer service. It kind of rivals Apple's customer service, their reputation. And if it's a little known secret that they might, if you're beyond the 1 year, they might actually offer to replace your busted Kindle for about half price.
Really?
If you're nice and you ask politely. They don't have to, of course, but they have been known to do that. I'm kind of like Apple's known for, you're a little bit outside your window, but we'll go ahead and take care of it.
Mm-hmm.
So what I would do, Michelle, is go to www.amazon.com/Kindle support. Then click on the Contact Us on the right-hand side. From there, you'll get an option to contact Amazon by email, phone, or chat. And, you know, you might just end up getting a Kindle for half price.
Yeah.
So,
who knows?
That'll help.
Here's the good news, though. I can tell you that your books are not just stored on your Kindle, but they are in, what? The cloud.
The cloud.
Yep, there's that term again.
There it is. They're in Amazon's cloud. So not only does Amazon still have all of your books, but they're even going to remember what page you had bookmarked in 50 Shades of Grey. You know the one.
an interesting little side note, though. If you have a Android device, such as an Android smartphone, and you do lose your Kindle, just download the Kindle Fire app onto your phone, and you can view all of your books right there. So
same thing with the iPad, iPhone, and most Android devices.
And you can do it on a web browser.
Yeah, a web browser.
Basically put Kindle on anything that can run... But
for those users that may need to finish that book that weekend and they just can't wait for their new Kindle to come in, they might have that as a little workaround in the meantime.
Yep. But once you get your replacement Kindle or whatever and you hook it back up to your Amazon account, it's going to download all your books and make them available to you just like before. So Amazon may be a vast evil empire, but they are a very convenient vast evil empire and they have great customer service.
That's true. So, all right, we got another email from Joel. He asks, is there an app that allows me to remotely access or control my Android smartphone? I've seen some that allow that to happen when your phone and desktop are on the same wireless network, but I want something similar to Log Me In, where I can be at my desktop and then log in and view and control my phone, even if I'm not on the same wireless network. Aaron, that's going to be you. I don't know anything about this one.
This really is kind of a new field for Droid devices. For a while, you've seen stuff... like Log Me In that allows you to control your Windows or even a Mac-based computer with your Android device. but not a whole lot going back the other way from a computer to your phone. There is a program now called WebKey, which is a great app from the Google Play Store. It allows you to control your phone via web browser. The downside, though, is it requires root access on your Android phone, like a lot of the other cool toys for droids. So if you do have a rooted droid device, you can control your phone from any browser. You'll be able to click, type, GPS, screenshot, and etc. So pretty much full control of the device from your web terminal.
That's cool.
There's also one called Remote My Droid. They have a light version. Their pro version is coming soon. That offers kind of a similar way to control your phone. So there are a few options now coming out, and I'm sure very soon you'll be able to do something like that without root within the next generation or two.
Yeah, so nothing right now that doesn't require rooting it.
Not that I've seen.
Okay. Because, I've seen there's similar products for Apple or iPhone and iPad, but you have to jailbreak it.
So same boat.
Yeah. So, and we'll talk about more about what jailbreaking and rooting is later on in the show.
Absolutely.
Tom, you want to grab the next one?
Sure, Ray. I absolutely do. Joel again. He actually wrote us in with another question. I assume it's the same Joel. I'm interested in using a tablet for mini presentations with small groups of people. I've seen presentations done on the iPad with the Keynote software, which looks amazing. Is there anything comparable to Keynote for Android tablets?
Oh, yeah. Well, I'm sorry. This is actually your area of expertise again, Aaron, but Keynote for iPad, that's one thing I got to say. It's gorgeous.
Yeah.
It's so gorgeous.
Yeah, Ray, just tell the audience a little bit about, just briefly, what Keynote is so they know.
Keynote is like Microsoft PowerPoint, except it's beautiful, and it works well, and it works great, actually. I've used both extensively, and PowerPoint is excruciating. Keynote is lovely.
Yeah.
And actually, there's Keynote Remote for iPhone, which you can use Keynote on your iPhone, and that's pretty good too. But what's really cool is with Keynote Remote, it's like a 99-cent app. You can control Keynote on your iPad. So it's like having a little remote to move forward and backwards, and you can see all your notes. So it's really awesome. You plug in your iPad to a presentation screen, and you're good to go. So it is really awesome. But there are some options for Android as well, right, Aaron?
Absolutely. There's the popular iClicker app is actually now available on Android.
Oh, okay.
And if you want to test it out, they have iClicker Lite, which is free. It allows you to do shorter presentations up to 15 pages. So if you want to test it out, or if you only do short presentations for school and stuff, it could be a very useful app. The full version is $9.99, so kind of pricey for some users, but if you need it, it's a really good app. It's the best presentation remote as reported by the New York Times. So got some real good kudos on that.
Cool.
It allows you to completely control your PowerPoint slides, including the animations, tracks your presentation times, alerts you with silent buzzes when your time runs out.
Oh,
and,
nice.
Allows you to view your slides and your slide notes on your handset. Cool thing about it is it's easy to set up. There's zero configuration, native support for Android, and it supports connections over Wi-Fi and Bluetooth.
Cool.
Sweet.
A couple other ones I'll quickly mention. StageFlow Keynote Remote. It's a little over $6. Can control Keynote with your Android phone.
Yeah.
Oh, great. Well, so
that's
how
it
works. Works with your Mac to control Keynote slides remotely and view scrollable presenter notes. And doesn't require a separate server application on the Mac, so that one's kind of cool. No iPad control at the moment because they don't support remote login, but it does work on a regular Mac.
Oh, that's great.
And the last one is called Presenter. It's a little bit more scaled down than the other two, but the full paid version is only $2.99.
That's not bad.
The nice thing about Presenter is it's simple and it works over Bluetooth, so you don't have to worry about network.
That's always nice.
Don't have to worry about network connections and connecting to a Wi-Fi or anything like that. A simple Bluetooth setup, no frills, gives you exactly what you need, and it's complete cross-platform support, so it works with Windows, Mac, and Linux.
Oh, that's good. Oh, that's not bad.
Cool.
Well, we'll include some additional information too on our show notes about that to give you some links. Let's see. Oh, we actually got another question from Joel. He said, both my wife and I have the HTC Droid Incredible from Verizon Wireless, rooted and running, I can never remember
Cyanogen
mod 7.2 ROM. We're coming up to our contract renewal, which means we're planning to upgrade our phones. Since there are so many options out there, what are the current best phones for the different carriers right now? What are the best phones for rooting? So a couple different questions there. I can let you guys tackle this one.
Yeah, I think Aaron and I are probably in agreement with this. The Samsung Galaxy S3 is in pre-order right now from Verizon. It's a very sweet-looking device. And something that's really cool about it is it's the same phone is supported across all the carriers. It's the identical phone.
Yeah, I mean, we've never really seen this before in Android. You know, you have the iPhone 4S, and if you have the iPhone 4S, it's the iPhone 4S. But this is the first time we've seen an Android device, the Galaxy S3, be the Galaxy S3 on Verizon, the Galaxy S3 on AT&T, exactly.
Yeah.
And it's not a bunch of different hardware versions.
No.
It's the same hardware.
So support for that one is going to be much higher than a lot of the other devices because the hardware is all the same. So the development community is going to be really big on that one.
And it's a Google device. It's a Google branded device. So
am I right in saying that? Always makes a difference.
Yeah. Like, so that right there is going to make it very open, probably to support and being rooted in all that kind of stuff.
And you're most likely to get the newest versions of
the operating
Android
systems. Yeah.
So when the new toys come out, you get to play with them.
Now, there are some other options on other networks other than Verizon for our listeners. So if they are thinking about switching or if you're on another network, AT&T, as well as the Galaxy S3, has the HTC One X.
Yes, I've heard good things.
It's a very nice device. T-Mobile has their variant of that, which is the HTC One S. And Sprint has the HTC Evo 4G. And, of course, the Samsung Galaxy Nexus is officially back on sale in the United States.
Yay!
For those that don't know, the Android lovers like the Nexus series because they are supported by Google rather than carriers for the software updates. So
that's
anytime
cool.
There's a new update like Jelly Bean now 4.1 coming out, the Nexus devices are going to get that rollout before Verizon and Sprint roll it out to their carrier-specific
phones. Yeah, they did a really good job following Apple's lead of telling the carriers, we're in charge of our operating system, not you. So I'm glad to see that happening with more carriers.
And to wrap up the question, CyanogenMod, since you said you had it, Joel, is a very popular custom ROM for Android, and since it supports a wide array of devices, it's kind of a benchmark for what phones and manufacturers are good for rooting, and right now it seems the best ones are from HTC and Samsung.
Okay.
They seem to have the largest support base for customization, a little bit more than Motorola and LG at the moment. But of course, the next generation of phones may always flip that, and we may see LG and Motorola come back to the top of the list.
All right. Well, thanks, Joel, for asking those questions. And actually, some of those affect me because I'm thinking of looking at Android devices. Don't tell anybody.
We'll
but we have got to take another quick break. We will be back and with more of your questions. This is Deemable Tech. If you missed an episode of Deemable Tech, or you just want to hear the show again, you can catch our podcast on our website at deemable.com/podcast. That's deemable.com. Also, be sure to follow us on Facebook at facebook.com/deemable, or on Twitter at deemable. You can also find us on Google+. Just search for Deemable Tech. Up next, we'll be taking your calls, reading your emails, and answering your questions. If you have a tech question for Deemable Tech, give us a call at 904-372-DEEM. That's 904-372-3336. Or send us an email to questions@deemable.com. Welcome back to Deemable Tech. Let's take some more of your emails.
We have one from James P. He asks, should I jailbreak my iPhone? It sounds like you can do a lot more stuff with your phone if you do that, but I'm scared that AT&T will find out and I will get into trouble.
Oh, scared of Big Brother. That's
I'll let you take this one, Ray.
Legitimate fear. Okay. Well, there was once a time where I would have been obligated to tell you that you shouldn't jailbreak your iPhone. And if you do, you take the potential consequence of voiding your warranty and you're possibly breaking the law by violating Apple's copyright. However, fortunately, The U.S. Copyright Office decided in 2010 that jailbreaking an iPhone, despite Apple's incessant protests against it, or jailbreaking an iPhone or any other mobile phone does not violate federal copyright law.
Hooray!
So, that being said, you're not breaking the law if you jailbreak your iPhone, but you should still proceed with caution.
Yes.
It can void your warranty. Actually, if you get caught, it does void your warranty, period.
Well, and that's something to keep in mind. Jailbreaking or rooting an Android phone, it's not that that actually violates your terms of service. It's getting caught. So if you're going to take it back into the shop, you know, don't do something that's not smart. Remember to set it back to factory default settings and unjailbreak or unroot your Android device before you take it into the store.
Mm-hmm. But even if you do everything right and you take it back for something completely unrelated to the jailbreaking or rooting, they still could say, you know, if they caught you somehow, it's kind of hard to actually catch you doing it, but they could still say, oh, we know that you did this, so we're not going to validate your warranty. We're not going to take care of it. So it can void your warranty.
But it's legal.
But it's legal. It's completely legal.
You're not going to go to jail for it.
And it could cause your phone to brick or completely irreparably stop from working. Mm-hmm. That's not as big of a problem with Android. It is with iPhone. It can still happen. But as a professor at Columbia Law School, Tim Wu, has said, jailbreaking is legal, ethical, and just plain fun. So you were saying that it doesn't violate the terms of service to do it, just getting caught does. But you always should reset your back to default settings.
Yeah,
if you take it in for service.
Be smart. Don't tell them I've got a rooted Android.
Well, and I don't know about the iPhone, but at least for Android, it's very easy to test whether your device has root. You can actually just go to the App Store and download a root checker app that does not require root on your device to install. So you can easily install it and just run it, and it'll just give you a little display that says you have root access or you do not have root access. So from a technical standpoint, if they take it into the back, all they have to do is run that app on there, and they'd be able to tell if you have it. So
with iPhone, I mean, considering how combative Apple has been against the jailbreaking community, I don't think there's anything like that on the App Store official app.
Yeah.
But let me back up a step, actually, and explain what jailbreaking is for those of our listeners who don't know, because honestly, I didn't really know not very long ago. Jailbreaking is altering your iOS device, like your iPhone or your iPad or your iPod Touch or your Apple TV, to remove the limitations that Apple places on the device to give you root access to the operating system. That's why a similar process on Android is called rooting, because it's simply accessing the root of the OS.
Right. I think jailbreaking is kind of just a term, kind of like the cloud we talked about before in the show, about how it's a catchphrase. It's something that people
It's something that goes back to its roots in Unix. Unix has a jail that the operating system is confined to, and those rules confine what the OS can and can't do.
Gotcha.
And jailbreaking is literally removing it from that jail, because the core of Apple's iOS is Unix or a Linux modification. So
what's the upside, though? We've talked about some of the dangers of...
Yeah. Well, jailbreaking your iPhone gives you the ability to install apps that aren't approved by Apple, because Apple is notorious for having a strict lock on which apps get into the App Store. And by default, you can't just add anything you want to your iPhone. It has to come through the App Store. That's one of the ways that they jail the OS.
Gotcha.
Also, unlocking your iPhone gives you... You can jailbreak your iPhone to unlock it so that you can put it on other networks.
Ah.
And also, you can install themes and patches to your iPhone to make it look and perform differently, like adding different keyboards. Like, you guys get to enjoy Swipe. I don't.
Mm-hmm.
Swipe keyboard is amazing, but I don't get to play with it.
That is kind of another benefit of the Android community, is that they can do a lot of the jailbreak-type features without having to have root access, such as changing the interface. You can change your home screens, your keyboard.
The Android OS is not as jailed as the iOS.
And in fact, you mentioned restricted apps. Google does have that restriction on the Android devices. However, you can easily change that by going into the settings and enable a little checkbox that says install apps from unknown sources. And you can install an app from an APK file, from the internet, from an SD card.
And I think that's the best way to go. Give the customers the choice of, mm-hmm. do I want this to come through the pre-approved checked method, or do I want to have the freedom to do what I want? Which Apple has actually done with their Mac OS. Hmm. Now you can choose just to get things from the App Store, or you can install whatever you want to.
Mm-hmm.
So it seems that they're kind of moving a little bit in that direction in some regards.
And maybe they'll move that way with iPhone. I remember my old Palm Pre, I always bring this up, but my lovely Palm Pre with WebOS, it was that way. You could quote-unquote root your Palm Pre just by typing in the old Konami code. Help me out, guys.
Up, down,
start,
left, right.
Start.
Not that Konami.
Oh.
No. Yeah, up, down, down, left, right, AB, start, something like that.
Google it.
We've just lost nerd cred by not knowing the Konami code by heart.
It's, what, 20 years ago now?
Is.
Come on.
But in actually answer to the question, personally... Personally, I don't jailbreak my iPhone or iPad.
Really?
Mostly, it's because I'm chicken. I would love to, and not that I'm scared of my carrier or anything. I'm just, it takes too much work to get in there and do it, and I'm not that much of a tinkerer anymore. This is my primary phone, and I just want it to work. So if it was my secondary phone or when my current 4S goes out of warranty, mm-hmm. yeah, I'm going to tinker it like crazy.
Now, just out of curiosity, Ray, how difficult on, kind of in simple terms, is it to jailbreak an iPhone? Is it something that you can do with a piece of software? Is it something that you actually have to go in and do a lot of advanced settings?
It is actually pretty simple. I mean, you just download the software. There's several sites that you can get it from. There's a couple of different methods based on which hardware you have and what operating system you're running. I won't give all that information right now. We can possibly share some of the show notes.
There are software like Super One Click for Android that allows you to download, and within one or two clicks, you can easily root your Android device.
Yeah, and there's like Red Snow and Green Snow and Black Snow is some of the name, or Black Rain is some of the names of the iOS jailbreakers.
So it kind of is an automated script that'll do a lot of things for you.
Yeah, it pretty much does it all for you. And some of them are even untethered, which means you don't have to plug it into your computer.
Oh.
You just go to a web page and install it from there. So
nice.
I haven't done it personally. And like I said, I would love to be able to do some of the things that you can do with a jailbroken iPhone, but I just haven't had the guts to do it. I have a jailbroken Nintendo Wii,
mm-hmm.
and I love it. But I didn't do it. I my friend jailbroke it for me, and it was just because I was like, I don't have the time. I don't know. I'm not gonna mess with it. And also too, if I broke my Wii, I think my wife would kill me.
Mm.
And same thing with my iPhone. I think she'd kill me if I broke my iPhone too. So, but like I said, once my 4S goes out of warranty and I get the 5 or 6 or 7 or 38 or whatever the next iPhone's gonna be, I probably will go ahead and start tinkering with my 4S. When it's my spare device, so.
Yeah. All right, cool.
Well, we got another email from Sandra, and she asks, I bought an app from the App Store, and it doesn't work. Is there any way to get a refund?
That's a really good question. First of all, Sandra, it depends on what App Store you bought your app from, right? If you bought, your app on an Apple device, their App Store, there's going to be one answer.
Yeah.
If you bought your app from the Android Market, which has now been rebranded
Google Play
has they have different refund policies from Apple's App Store. So the answer is going to vary. I'll speak to Android.
Okay.
If you buy an app in Google Play, you actually have, interestingly, a very short window in which you can get a no questions asked automatic refund.
Oh.
Here's the trick. You have 15 minutes from the moment you download the app to get the refund. 15 minutes. So it probably takes a minute to download and a minute to install. So then you've got about 13 minutes left. The moral of the story is that when you download an app, you should immediately open it up to see if it works.
Yeah, absolutely.
If it crashes on you or if it isn't the app you thought it was, you need to get back into Google Play pronto. Just go right back to that same apps page and you will see a refund button and you just click it and that's it. It'll ask you, do you want to,
And
cancel this app.
After 15 minutes.
After 15 minutes.
Where does it go? Does the button
disappear?
Because
we know that not all of our listeners are going to remember. Because
actually,
every time
this happened to someone I'm familiar with who's the editor in chief over at Crackberry.
Mm-hmm.
He bought on a silly action. He just bought a $200 app.
Oh my gosh.
And he was like, oh, I waited too long.
Yeah.
Oh. He was just going to get a refund.
Yeah.
But so what happens after 15 minutes?
Well, before I tell you that, I want to mention for some of our listeners, I can already hear the wheels turning in their heads. This is a one-time deal. You can't keep downloading and refunding an app over and over again.
So if I need a timer for about 5 minutes,
yeah,
I shouldn't download the timer and then ask for a refund and then try to do it over and over
right
again.
The second time, no.
Okay.
Okay, but yeah. If you
purchase it the second time, you've purchased it for good, correct?
Mm-hmm, exactly.
Pretty much.
If you've waited longer than the 15 minutes, well, Google basically says you're at the mercy of the app's developer. Open Google Play, find your app, then scroll down the page to the developer section. There should be contact information for the people that developed the app, and you can send them a phone call or an email or whatever contact method they give you. And good luck with that.
So
some of them, of course, are better than others.
Sure.
Right.
Especially sometimes if it's their fault. Sometimes the app will be developed for the device you're on, and then the newest revision of it no longer works on your device. Mm-hmm. So there are sometimes legitimate reasons that you no longer need an app.
Developers like to pay the bills, so they like to keep their customers happy, even their disgruntled customers. So.
And I would not think, too, you like give a customer a refund. Perhaps they'll come back later when you develop a new software. Hey,
true.
They had a good experience.
Yeah. And some of these app developers are pretty big in their own right. So
yeah,
I would assume that it would definitely be in their best interest to have a refund process. Maybe a fly-by-night guy who just
selling
did this
$200 timer apps.
Yeah. Maybe he's not going to willing to help
you out.
It was
a Vuvuzela app. That's right.
Yeah. So. But, you know, like I tested this by downloading a game from Disney the other day, and I would assume that Disney would probably work with me on the subject. I'm assuming that, but I'm hopeful.
But you were able to get your refund.
Yeah, I got my refund in 15 minutes.
That's great.
It totally worked.
I told you should have kept the app, though. It was a great app. Anyways.
All right, so what about the iPhone?
Well, with iPhone and iPad apps, you can't get a refund. Sorry, sucks to be you. Okay, that's not entirely true. Well, actually, it is true, technically. The iTunes store terms and conditions specifically say all sales and rentals of products are final. So they don't have to refund you anything.
Oh, geez.
So, fortunately, though, however, if you have bought some terrible app or you purchased an app and it didn't do what you think it would do, you may be able to get a refund. And it has worked for everyone that I've talked to. It has worked every time.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of one of those things like Apple does. They set really strict policies and they don't enforce them.
Mm-hmm.
So they have the leeway to say, oh, you know what? We're going to take care of you.
They look like the good guy.
They look great. You know, like, yeah, we got this strict policy, but we're going to take care of you. So what you do is if this happens to you and you just got this app that's absolutely terrible and you don't want to use it or didn't do what you thought it did, go open up iTunes on your desktop or laptop as soon as possible. Now, there's no time frame that you have to act within like there is with Android, but probably the sooner the better. I mean, if you say, oh, I don't need it, and it's 30 days later, that kind of looks fishy.
Yeah.
So then once you open up iTunes, go to the iTunes store, click on your account. It's going to be that email address in the top right corner. It's going to be the one you use to sign into your iTunes account. And then go down to purchase history and click see all. From there, you'll scroll down to the bottom that says report a problem and click it. Then click the report a problem link that appears next to the app that you want to get a refund for. And then choose one of the reasons for your complaint. I didn't receive this application. I inadvertently purchased this application. This application does not function as expected, or this application is not compatible with my device. And then finally, click submit and hope or pray to whatever God you believe in.
The God of tech.
So,
Steve
and
Jobs.
Like I said, in most cases, they have done it. There's been very few cases that I've heard of personally where people didn't get their refund. But again, you know, they don't have to. So. You know, we'll see. Got another question from Andre. Tom, can you grab that?
Sure. Andre says, I was at the mall and I overheard someone using Siri on their iPhone recently.
Ah.
They told Siri, call my sister. And it did. How does Siri know who that person's sister was? Does it know who my family members are? How does Siri figure that out?
Well,
Siri is clairvoyant.
No, unfortunately, or fortunately, depending on your perspective, Siri is not clairvoyant. She only knows what you tell it, so you would need to tell Siri who your sister is.
How would you do that?
Well, actually, let's see if she behaves for me, and I can demonstrate this. Call my father.
What is your father's name?
David Bunker.
Okay, do you want me to remember that David Bunker is your father?
Yes.
Nice.
Noted. David Bunker is your father. Calling David Bunker, mobile.
And now I'm calling my dad. So there you go. And he's going to have a missed call later on. I didn't realize that I was trying to think of who I didn't have stored that way. So what you do is you just go in there and tell Siri that you want to talk to someone in your family. And then she asks you, okay, well, who are you talking about?
And then it gives you the option.
Yeah. So
to save it.
It's pretty intuitive as far as, you know, figuring that out. Mm-hmm. Now, once you have it saved, it will just know it. So for instance, if I say, call my mom.
Which phone number for Lauren Bunker? Home. Calling Lauren Bunker, mobile.
Nice.
Now she's also going to have a missed call. But yeah, so it knew it. And it also said, you know, which phone number do you want me to call?
Mm-hmm.
So it figures that stuff out.
That's very cool.
That is one thing that it does fairly well.
We've got another question from William. This is a fun one. He says, why should I use Twitter? What's the point of it?
Twitter is, of course, if you don't know, it's a social network where you share blurbs of about 140 characters.
140 character limit.
And it's not quite as popular as like Facebook. It's like maybe a quarter of the population of Facebook, but it's really fantastic for news. I think that's what I use it for.
That's right. I
mean, a lot of people just post, you know, had coffee, ate, use the bathroom, ridiculous. And
for those that haven't used Twitter before, it's kind of like Facebook status updates, and that's about it.
That's pretty much it. Yeah.
You see this flow of like random bits from people.
Yeah, but the one thing that Twitter is actually fantastic for, maybe even better than Facebook, is when news happens, it's on Twitter first. If you want to see what's going on, go to Twitter and look at the trending topics.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the only news that I can think of in the last 2 years that I didn't learn about from Twitter first was actually when Steve Jobs passed. And that's because I was watching the evening news, which I never do. otherwise, most people learn about breaking news on Twitter.
And I can add a little anecdote of my own to this. I don't know if you guys remember, about last year there was an earthquake on the East Coast.
Yeah.
I learned of it from Twitter. I saw my Twitter feed kind of blowing up about that. And the funny thing is, somebody did actually a study. They were able to track the seismic waves with Twitter.
Yeah, that's really cool. I mean, I think that's really the purpose that it serves the best.
Mm-hmm.
But that is all the time we have for today. Thanks for all your emails and voicemails, and please keep them coming.
Absolutely.
Our producer is Sean Birch. I'm Ray Hollister.
I'm Tom Broad.
I'm Aaron Edelson.
And this is Deemable Tech. Thanks for listening. Have a great week.